This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Back of the chest. Coronavirus Self-Isolation Podcast.
Hello and welcome to Back of the Chest, the lockdown sessions. I'm Chris Hambling and I'm your host as we once again try to tackle the boredom and cabin fever generously bestowed upon us by some sort of bat or possibly some weird little creature that looks a bit like a shit armadillo. I'll introduce you to the panel after this short message.
No paywall, no subscription.
Back of the Nest.
Fan-created podcasts, videos and articles. Free forever.
Hi gentlemen, I have with me Chris Clark.
Hello, Hambo. You all right?
Yeah, marvellous, mate. Marvellous. It's almost like we've been on a recording session for fucking hours already, isn't it?
Oh, it's been going really well, though.
Oh, swimmingly. And we also have Mr. Mike Scott. Hello, Mike.
Hello, all. Thank you for sticking with us for 7 or 8 episodes of this shit. Still listening.
I think it's getting better all the time. I've only got listened through half the preview pod so far, but I've got such tea-based rage, particularly at Hesketh, who's disrespecting tea. I'm finding it hard to focus, but yeah, do check out the preview pod as well. But let's have a quick catch up. Talk to you first, actually, Mike. You're devastated. Apparently, one of your favourite pods has been cancelled.
Yeah, I just want to say about the preview. What the world needs is three men chatting about tea on a podcast. Definitely, good work, gentlemen. Yes, so I follow quite a geeky pod called Linux Action News, and it's one of those ones that if you're a computer nerd, something to listen to. But it's an American-based one, and the parent company that owns it sacked the English presenter with immediate effect this week. So there was a quick 2-minute new episode that came out today from the other presenter saying, My colleague Joe has been fired. I'm sure he'll make a statement about it, but I'm sorry that the pods had to end here. So I went onto his Twitter. It turns out this guy, he pulled out one C-bomb, one use of the word cunt, and was instantly fired. And the podcast has had to end. Just imagine how many English and Australian pods would not exist if you pulled out the C-bomb and they instantly got stopped. Americans, they're too touchy. That's all I can say about that.
Yeah, I mean, they love guns, but don't you dare swear, right? Don't you dare swear.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm obviously devastated at the loss of Linux Action News, was it?
Yeah, I mean, the title gives you an idea about just how much high velocity stuff was going on.
Yeah, I guess you were a fan as well, Will Chris. Are you similarly upset?
I'm devastated. I mean, you know, their coverage of the role of the 5G network in the current pandemic has been unrivaled.
Indeed, indeed. Well, we'll all have to just get on and try to live day by day, won't we? Until perhaps a new Linux-based podcast comes back. Chris, you're struggling with the old sleep pattern. We're recording this. It's about, spoiler alert, it's probably about 8 o'clock at night, probably more than that considering how long we've been on. How long you been up?
2-3 hours. Regular listeners know that this is a habit of mine, that I'm often up just in time for recording sessions, which tend to take place in the kind of early evening. With today being the secular chocolate day, as it is, and as I can't be with my family, I had absolutely no reason to get up. which is a pattern that has been emerging over the previous few weeks, frankly, despite the fact that I'm working. I can do my work whenever I want to because it's not hugely time sensitive. So I'm tending to do it in the kind of small hours, possibly while nursing a beer occasionally.
No, you're up. Yeah. Well, you know, you do struggle, don't you, Chris? Staying awake and, you know, getting to sleep as well, because there's all that beer to drink before you get to go to sleep. And, it can get tricky. Well,
absolutely. And on that note, I mean, I do have to pay tribute to my good friends at the Kronk's Brewery, who have done a sterling arrangement for anyone who happens to be resident in Central Croydon. You can get hold of 10 litres of some of their best beers just by going to the online shop, and they deliver it to your door at a very reasonable price. So I hope I'm okay to do product placement here. I'm not doing it with any benefit to me, except that more people will get to taste this great beer. It's the Kronk's Brewery, which is brewed by Palace fans as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's no harm in shamelessly plugging something in the hope that you might get a freebie. I mean, the preview guys do it every week, so why wouldn't you? Yeah, look, I tell you, things have changed for me a little bit of late. You know, this whole self-isolation part, I mean, I'll be honest with you, I don't do an awful lot, you know, anyway, with my life other than work. So it's not been that much of a change. I've found it quite interesting. So I am suffering from getting the daily exercise rage, right? So I've been out a few times. I'm quite fortunate. I'm not too far away from the sort of Thames towpath in Reading. And it's quite picturesque. You've got a load of sort of boat clubs and, you know, there's fucking geese and swans everywhere and all that kind of stuff. And it's, you know, it's quite nice. If you go out too late, you get bitten to death by mosquitoes and things. But other than that, it's all right. But I just get the rage now, because you go down there and there's people sitting around reading books, having picnics, you know, all the benches along the towpath were just full of people just sitting down doing nothing and taking in the sun. You're like, every single one of them would say, "Oh, but I'm socially distancing." And you're like, that isn't the point. Those aren't the rules. And as you know, Chris and Mike, you can't have fun without rules, can you? That's the way it goes. But I did sort of notice today that it's interesting, the sort of reaction of people to being given a restriction that says you can only go out once a day to exercise. I'm willing to bet, similar like me, that most of those people would do what I would do usually in an evening or throughout the course of a day where they didn't have to go out particularly. You'd be sat in front of the TV, and in my case, drinking and eating scampi fries, because, you know, they are the finest available snack. But because I'm told I can only go out once a day to exercise, I'm going out once a day and walking, you know, between 5 and 8 kilometres along the Thames towpath. I'm going to come out, and I'm also doing free weights at home. I'm going to come out of this an absolute Adonis or something.
Even more than you already were. Yeah. Look, if you tell someone to do something, they're going to do the opposite. So it's a genius move. It's an absolute genius move. Everyone's going to get fit by doing 10-mile walks.
If you do come out of it looking like an Adonis, then we're going to have a moment on the glorious day when we return to Selhurst Park where I'll go down to the seats and again I will say, "Where's Hambo?" You'll be sitting next to me.
Yeah, that was due to the removal of my glorious beard, which, you know, let's face it, everyone's got a Corona beard at the moment, even some of the less fortunate ladies. Is that okay to say?
You said it.
Probably have to cut that out. Or bleep it all, maybe. You can just do one long bleep and pretend I never said that. Oh, dear. Right, should we crack on? Just to get this out of the way, we are sponsored, of course, by the wonderful Pitch Sport Football. Download their app, Google Pitch Sport Football, find it there, and you can join us on there. They're simulating the season at the moment. I think we lost 4-0 to Leicester today. Thank God that's not real. And I predicted a 1-1 draw. I'd be quite honest.
We lost 4-0 and we had 2 shots in the entire game.
Well, that bit's fairly believable. Yeah. But the conceding 4, very, very unlikely, I feel. But they're using Football Manager to do that. And my experiences with Football Manager are that certain teams you just seem to concede a whole bunch of goals against. Anyway, so do get involved on that. If you want to add me in the mates section, my code is KUGKUT. If you want to get in touch with us for any of these podcasts about whatever you like, as you would have noticed, we do talk about whatever we like. You can send us a WhatsApp voice message on 0203 575 1266. On the socials, we are on Instagram at Back of the Nest CPFC. Twitter is at Back of the Nest. Facebook, Back of the Nest. YouTube, Back of the Nest. And you can email hi@backofthenest.com. And don't forget to get your iTunes reviews or your podcast app reviews in. 5 stars, but whatever you write in terms of text, you can write what you like, including comments about DR and mouthwash, and more on DR later on. Finally, he did, by the way, win the FIFA tournament we set up last week. I'm sure we'll knock together further tournaments. I believe the £30 that he won from sponsorship will be going to charity. He doesn't know that yet, but it will be going to charity. Right, shall we crack on with some football chat, gents? We've got a team of the decade update. So as of last week, it was Speroni in goal. He defeated Vicente Guaita. And left back, Patrick Van Aanholt, who defeated Papa Suare. He wasn't called Patrick Suare, was he? Centre-back, Scott Dan saw off Mamadou Sakho. Damien Delaney saw off James Tompkins. And at right-back, Ward was victorious over Aaron Wan-Bissaka. And this week, it's between Luka Milivojevic and Johan Kabay. And the winner, quite convincingly, was Johan Kabay. 82.4% of all votes, with Luka only getting 17. And a bit of reaction from that, starting with yourself, Chris. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that's it looks like a pretty good selection, to be honest. I mean, and I think that you've got to reflect on the reality that, you know, we've got to be a solid team. So,
So you're going with Kabay over Luka because of the team?
Yeah, he made the players around him better.
And I mean, concise. You were concise. That's a fair point. The reason I said you were concise is I'd gone back on mute and was reaching for some more wine.
Sorry about that, mate.
It's fine. You know, if you could just elaborate a bit further so I can get at least a sip.
But Next time I will, yeah.
Yeah, cheers, man. No, look, I'm not surprised by, you know, Kabay was... But I do feel that, you know, at both stages, I sort of said this a bit last week, you know, when Kabay was playing for us for a long period of time, you know, his abilities and his effectiveness in the team was called into question. And Luka being a current player is getting that same sort of treatment at the moment. And it's funny how once a player stops playing for you, often their abilities get magnified. I don't think it should have been quite that comprehensive, but I think I probably just would have gone for Kabay myself. Mike?
Pretty much agree with you there. I feel like Luka is we've mentioned it, a lightning rod for issues this season. And possibly that's affected his scoring a little bit. I mean, to only get less than 1 in 5 votes seems harsh. This is a man that ended up making the captaincy his own when it wasn't necessarily his in the first place. And he has been a leader. Kabay had some excellent times and he was is an excellent footballer. And in fact, when people were discussing on Twitter today about players they wanted back, if we could have any Palace player in their prime, some people went for Kabay. So you're talking about a really class player, but there was periods, especially in the Frank de Boer and subsequent era, when Kabay was getting a lot of stick and he wasn't necessarily doing all the things we hoped of him. So he didn't score quite as many goals as I'd have liked in a Palace shirt. I probably would have gone for him, but I was expecting it to be sort of 60-40. So for it to be 82%, I'm quite shocked. Both of those players, I'd be happy with them in the team of the decade, to be honest.
The other element is whether it's actually a like for like. Because for me, you know, I'd actually pick both of them, probably. It's one of those kind of invidious choices where I can see why it'd be really difficult to make that choice. If you've got Kabay in the team, then I'd pick Luka next to him, possibly, but then you know you're gonna hear my team, my favourite players soon, and that may reflect on this as well. So I'll shut up.
Interesting. We are going to come to that very, very shortly. And I know what you mean. I was actually probably expecting the two sort of central midfield / central defensive midfield positions to be filled by those two players. But you know, it's the listeners and the people who follow us on the socials that are doing the voting. And this was first versus fourth, I think. So we'll see what happens with the next position available in midfield. See who that's between. Bit of a tease there, but I genuinely don't know. So next up in terms of the considerations is a forward position, and that's between Christian Benteke and Glenn Murray. So get on our various social areas. I don't know what's happened there. Social areas, is that? That's a thing, isn't it? Our social media accounts. So check out Twitter and Facebook in particular, and you'll be able to put your vote in there. I think the vote is going to be skewed somewhat by, particularly on Facebook, by Mikey selecting a picture of Glenn Murray in a Brighton shirt to the rage of many. But, you know, I think to some people that's a really obvious choice. To me, not so much. You think about that first season for Benteke and the number of goals he scored, and you think about, you know, Glenn Murray's effectiveness at Premier League level. Of course, it's team of the decade, so we have to take their full period at Palace into account. But, you know, I go back to my gut feeling when we signed Christian Benteke and let Murray go off to Bournemouth. And I very much felt that it was ridiculous to suggest that Benteke wasn't a fairly significant upgrade on Glenn Murray at that time. Although history doesn't necessarily prove me correct there.
I mean, you got to talk about longevity. I'm sure Mo is going to cane this. What I would say, IE should already win the Team of the Decade for 2020 to 2029. So we've definitely got that wrapped up.
Absolutely right. Anyway, without further ado, let's get on and hear from Mr. Christopher Clark, who's going to deliver his all-time favourite Palace 11. Over to you, Chris.
Thank you, Chris. You know, I know people will have been waiting with bated breath to hear these selections. So without further ado, I'll run through the 11 and explain my logic in the selections. Now, bear in mind that this is not necessarily the best 11. It's my favourite 11. So that necessary caveat out of the way. Here we go. So in goal, you've got Nigel Martin, who was a fantastic keeper for us, and you know, someone you just knew that he had great saves in him, and he didn't make mistakes. So, and, you know, I mean, the fact that he was an England goalkeeper while playing for Palace and stayed at Palace while the England goalkeeper speaks volumes about the man.
Jump in there. I mean, you picked the same keeper as me, but I forgot last time out, and I think it's important that we mention it. Not only was he a great goalkeeper, but when he joined us, he had a lovely moustache.
Yeah, that's very true. I look at that jealously because I can't grow anything as elegant as that even now. So then back four, I've kind of spanned the decades a little bit with this. So left back, PVA was in the running, but ultimately I went with Dean Gordon because I love the fact he was so fast and he had a demon free kick on him. So he's my choice for left back. Blimey. Right back, Nathaniel Klein. It just goes to show. I mean, I am known as carbon copy among the pod, and this is becoming clear why now to a certain extent. So Klein, you know, I left us too early, but someone who, you know, if he had stayed with us, I would have loved to have seen more of that. And when you look back through the years, it was either him or Joel Ward in terms of contribution. For me, it had to be Klein. In terms of centre backs, I've gone with Scott Dan. Because he was at his best, and for a number of years after he joined us, he was absolutely consistently solid and scored goals as well with his head. So, and he combined very well with my other choice, which is Damien Delaney, who I love because he played better than he looked like he was capable of in points during the time after we came up. No, I think, you know, people were regularly saying that he was past it and that he was ready to be dropped. But he played out of his skin. He also scored the goal that set off the Christambul comeback. So, you know, you've got to love the guy. And, yeah, what a player. So, midfield, I really struggled with this because, frankly, I wanted to pick three wingers, and that's how I've ended up doing it, by cheating and giving one of them a free role. So I've got Andros Townsend and Yannick Bolasie swapping sides occasionally, and Wilf in a free role with Mile Jedinak as the anchor defensive midfielder. Again, so much of this was to do with the character of the players, because Jedi, you just knew, you know, he was tough as nails and he'd give anything for the shirt. Bolasie looked like he loved playing football, and I, you know, you never knew what he was going to do, and I really miss him. But I couldn't not have Townsend in the team because the way he's played for us since he came to us has been amazing.
Could I just jump in with Townsend?
Please.
I'm really interested in that one because, I mean, I do rate Andros, and I think he's been great in a Palace shirt. But, I mean, I struggle because, I mean, I put Salako on one wing and Zaha on the other. I went with a kind of a 4-4-2 with Jeff Thomas and Andy Gray in midfield. But I don't know. I'm a mate. So, I mean, do you remember Salako? You'd go Andros over Salako. I'm surprised.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I know. It's difficult. I mean, I think probably they've both coloured my perceptions of them a little bit by the way they've behaved.
Yeah, I know where you're going. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I don't even need to say it. So, yeah, if you look up any of John Salako's opinions, then that has an impact on my feelings about him subsequently. And this is my favourite 11, not necessarily the best 11.
Not any of his opinions, just some. Selection of.
It doesn't take long to find them, though.
I still love John Salako, whether I agree with him on certain areas or not.
I was so happy when I had a photo taken with him at Speroni's testimonial, because at that stage I didn't realise the opinions that he has. So, yeah, that's coloured that slightly. And Townsend, actually, I think, has been an absolute diamond in terms of his perspective on this current COVID crisis as well, where he's been standing up and doing interviews, explaining the logic behind not immediately agreeing to a pay cut. So, you know, you've got to give the guy kudos for that, in my opinion. Let's move on to the strikers. And none of the current crop, or indeed anyone from the current Premier League era, makes it for me. So I went with Ian Wright, which is a controversial selection given that he left the club. But he's too good. And I love the guy. And, you know, ultimately, he scored the goals that got us into that FA Cup final, which was a major factor in my falling in love with Palace, you know, beyond the fact that it was already my club. He made it so much more. And then in the years that I started going, Chris Armstrong was the main striker. And I think someone like him with those wingers now and Wilf would absolutely score so many goals in the current Premier League level. So I struggled with a few players I had to miss out. I've got some special mentions to make. Sun Ji-hai, he wasn't here that long, but he was someone who I struggled with not including. Neil Danz, who scored some fantastic goals, especially from free kicks. Simon Rodger, who was fantastic as a defensive midfielder, and he was in there until I decided I had to go with Jedinak just because of the way that he led us to promotion. And then in terms of the strikers, there are so many, but the one I will single out because I imagine most people won't mention him is Paul Stewart, who was only with us for one season on loan, but was the best player I'd seen in a Palace shirt at that time. And I was gutted that he didn't come to us permanently.
So it's Wilf's in the free role there. So basically, you've got in your team, you've got cheated by having Jedinak controlling the entire central midfield on his own.
Yep.
Shameless. I'm going to give you a correction. As well, a correction. You said that Ian Wright got us the goals to get us into the FA Cup final. Well, of course, he was injured, wasn't he? Until the FA Cup final itself, scored in the 3-3.
Yes.
Scored the two goals. Unfortunately, couldn't achieve the same feat off the bench in the replay. So.
Correct,
thank you
for the correction.
That aside, obviously a phenomenal player. You know, you picked quite a lot of the players I did, you know, Wilf and Ian Wright were in mine as well. So, interesting selection. I twisted the format to get everybody you wanted in, like it.
Yeah, well, I did the same in order to get Bolasie and Townsend in, playing with it a little bit. But you've got to get Bolasie in for... just that X factor, the fact he didn't even know what he was doing. But Townsend has got that kind of... he transcends football in that he you'd want to have a pint with him. And he's obviously a very clever guy. I mean, his dad clearly rubs off on him. They're two very intelligent, very interesting men. And he's going to have a long career in punditry, no question. So for me, he got in... on his personality as well as his playing ability. But there's been times when we've had to rely on Zaha so much, the only other outlet was Townsend. So at times when creativity was almost at nothing without Zaha, Townsend took a lot on his shoulders, and I don't think he necessarily gets enough credit. And also an absolute bargain for whatever he was, 12 million.
The other person I struggled with missing out was Jason Puncheon, who, you know, has always been a controversial figure among fans, but scored so many really important goals, especially in that first season, but even subsequently in terms of games that were crucial to keep us up. So, you know, and of course put us ahead in, again in a different FA Cup final. So a player who has been absolutely iconic for us, and, you know, I really struggled with not including him, but I couldn't justify it with the choices I've got.
There you go. I'll be honest with you, if I redid my team every day, I'd probably come up with a different team. Last week, those who listened will know that I came up with it in about 10 minutes before the start of the show, and I'm glad that I never have to think about it again. But yeah, thanks, Chris. Much appreciated. If you've got your own suggestions listening at home, you can get them in via any of the socials or email at hi@backofthenest.com, and we'll read them out, unless they're insane. I might not read them out if they're insane. Or maybe that's the best thing. Anyway, over to you, Mike, because we've got a few general Palace-related stuff, stories that have been throughout the course of the week to cover.
Yeah, it's nice that the club has actually given us something to talk about. Mainly today, push notification on most people's phones, statement from Hodgson on the current situation. Lengthy, slightly rambling, as you'd expect from him, but a great read. I'll just quote a little bit from him. It's on the website if you haven't read it yet. I'd like to talk about the work the club and indeed the players have done to help members of our local community. While it's incredibly commendable, it doesn't surprise me at all. I've been pleased to hear that work in our community has been stepped up even further than usual, and I was particularly keen to learn of club staff efforts in calling more than 1,200 season ticket holders over the age of 70 to check if they're okay, have a chat and offer support. Our local food bank near the stadium has been overwhelmed with demand, and whilst I'm immensely saddened by the reality of the service they provide, I'm pleased that we as a club are continuing to support their cause. That couldn't be more anti-Daniel Levy if it tried. He went on to talk about him and his wife and their balcony and overlooking the River Thames, and exactly what you'd expect from Roy Hodgson. Watching some documentaries, watching the Man City documentary and stuff, which it adds a sort of a personality to him that sometimes probably doesn't come across.
Really enjoyed that part of it. You know, he talked about getting some gym equipment delivered by the club, just like the players had, and setting up a gym in his apartment over the Thames, and that him and his wife are sort of taking turns having a go on it and all that kind of stuff. It was a lovely little insight into his existence. You know, you kind of forget that, you know, they're going through the same things we are, albeit in probably slightly nicer surroundings, let's face it. But everything he said, I think, you know, was, you can just get a sense of what a decent human being he is. And I enjoyed the fact that he wasn't afraid to talk a little bit political and talk a little bit about the wider picture at the moment.
And more than that, the fact that it changes tack so many times in one essay just gives you an insight into his mind. You know, he goes on to talk about players needing probably 3 or 4 weeks to prepare for the first match back. But he kind of has accepted that doesn't sound like it's going to happen. And they're just going to get on with it. And then saying he's in constant touch with the players. That's good. It's well worth a read. And it just sums up Roy better than probably anything we could say about him. It's his mind, like succinctly put into one little essay.
And I have to praise him just based on what Chris said just now about the political edge, where he actually said with regard to the NHS, I hope it might in future make us more aware that if you want this level of service, it needs a certain level of economic support. And I'm hopeful it will come from our taxes. We can't rely on the NHS being funded by charities or people making donations. It's nice that such individuals and organisations are doing so, and I'm full of praise for those who are doing it, but the work they're doing is quite incredible and needs adequate resourcing. Amen to that. I've had various messages today from friends saying, bloody hell, your manager's a socialist. And I'm extremely proud of him today for that.
Yeah, I'm going to get destroyed by tax off the back of this. But but rather that than have anyone else suffer, I have to say I'd much rather have to put my hand in my pocket a little bit more than I already do. That's fine with me. Great stuff from Roy. Again, we could sit here and talk about it all day and probably read it all out, but you know, take it in for yourself. The lack of football, you can tell he misses it just as much as we do, and that's really hit home a few times this week. But before we get into any more of that, there was an article in a newspaper I won't mention, but if we do mention it, we'll bleep it out. But again, we talked about Wilf last week, you know, 10 years at the club. What an amazing person he is. And the week before, I think it was actually, and DR was talking about all the work that he does that doesn't really get recognised. And Mike, this time it was recognised.
Yeah, it's off-brand for this particular newspaper to, for example, discuss the positivities of a black player. But let's just quote from it. The Wilfred Zaha Foundation normally helps the elderly in remote parts of the country. So they're talking about his home country. The Ivory Coast, aids women who've lost their partners, get back on their feet, and teaches basic skills to disadvantaged youths. Points out that he's always given 10% of his wages, which, you know, is fairly well known amongst Palace fans, but not necessarily amongst the wider world. And it's just a good look into his foundation and exactly what they do back in the Ivory Coast. A quote from his older sister. We know it's from the donation of Wilfred is doing that this is all possible. It means life at this time. Being a mother myself and having so many orphans under my care, imagine not having food, especially when shops are closed. It's helping save a lot of lives and we appreciate it a lot. So, you know, we're talking about somebody that we get to go and watch on the football field, literally saving lives. I'm stunned that this particular newspaper has posted this, but I suppose even, you know, when my clock breaks, it's still right occasionally.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, there's a lot of things that I enjoyed about it, and you know, particularly the discussion that, you know, pretty much as soon as he was a professional, he started this foundation. You know, the Wilfred Zaha Foundation. Why did I struggle with that word the second time? But you know, he started very, very early on and has funded it consistently, and it usually looks after, you know, as you're going through a specific type of situation. It's been expanded to cover the COVID crisis, which is, at the current time of recording, is quite limited in Ivory Coast, but you know, in particular poor areas, it's liable to increase. So it's extremely important work. But in all honesty, the other thing that I really enjoyed from the article is that it's run by his twin older siblings, Corinne and Karina, or Corinne and Karine. So they're twins, right? And one's called Corinne, and that's a guy, and you got Karine, who's a girl. I think that's, yeah. Am I alone in enjoying the similarity of the names?
Yeah, it's slightly child abuse, isn't it? Definitely.
I mean, I'm sure it isn't this, but it does seem a little unimaginative, doesn't it? We've got Karine, and we've got a girl one as well now. Just stick an E on the end of it, that'd be fine. I'm sure it wasn't that, though. And a massive respect to the work that they do as well, before I sound horrific. Also, another publication that I tend to avoid, but Mike, you're a big fan of TalkSport, PVA getting involved.
No, I'm not fucking having that. I'm not a massive fan. I'm not a massive fan of TalkSport. Unfortunately, I own a 2007 Vauxhall Vectra that doesn't have a little jack input. So until I recently bought one of those things where you can go to a radio station and listen to your phone through that from a radio frequency, I was basically stuck with listening to FM or AM radio. So it's just going between Five Live and TalkSport, or listening to some CDs. So I kind of end up listening to it on long journeys more than I probably should. But they had an interview with PVA. They've actually got a surprising amount of Palace representation recently, especially with the Townsend interview. But they got PVA on, and he just gave an insight into how the players are dealing with it at the moment. Two things that struck me. First of all, For a man from Holland, he has a very, very deep South London accent now, and puts in some quite interesting South London-isms when he talks. But yeah, he did say how much they're keeping them training still, which was quite eye-opening. It sounds as though they're basically doing a full-time job, just training, going through the training regimes they've been given, which is great. More than that, it sounded as though every other waking hour he had when he wasn't training, he was just watching Netflix. So although they've probably got houses about 20 times the size of my flat, it's good to know that players are still bored shitless watching Netflix.
That's it. Netflix and PlayStation/Xbox. Yeah, we're all in the same boat. But I bet he's got a nice big garden to go and play with the kids in as well. But hey, he deserves it. He works hard, so I'm not gonna begrudge him that. But yeah, always good to hear from the players. They, you know, give you that little bit of touch of reality and just keep in touch with them. But you know, I'm joking about it. But obviously, you know, these are highly tuned professionals who love what they do, and the fact that they can't do it anymore probably does hurt them a lot more than we realize. And it's probably quite tough on them mentally as well. I mean, yeah, obviously all the money makes it that much easier, but you know, they'll be itching to get back out there. There was a little chat on Instagram with Luca during the course of the week, and there's not a huge amount in it. It was a fairly short chat. There's see some detail on it on the Palace website and their Palace TV video stuff. But you know, Luca was talking on Instagram about his season, and yeah, interestingly, he talked about the fact that, you know, people might look at him and judge him harshly because, you know, he's only got a couple of goals this season, and he'd scored heavily in the prior couple of campaigns. Talked about, you know, scoring free kicks and mainly penalties, and how it just hasn't happened this time around. But he feels that he's done well, and most importantly, the team has done brilliantly. And I was just a little bit disappointed that we had a couple of replies on Twitter just basically saying, oh, he's been rubbish this year. And I know it's a fairly well-expressed view that Luca has been poor in comparison to previous seasons, and it's just not something I subscribe to. I think perhaps he's not been as influential as he was in prior campaigns, but you know, I do think we miss him when he's not there. And you know, there's been a couple of games where he hasn't played and we've played really well, and in particular James McCarthy's come in and stepped it up. Now he's match fit, but you know, I think Luca's just class, and I get a little frustrated when I see people being quite that disrespectful.
I was having a think about this, and the only criticism I can level at him, and I appreciate the fact that he was very forward in backing himself and saying, "Oh, I think I've had a decent season," and to an extent, that's probably more Serbian mentality, and people in the UK tend to be a bit more derogatory about themselves. But the only criticism I can have is he's kind of stood still in that the criticisms people have of him, he tends to repeat them. And this season we've seen players, like you say, like McCarthy, that have come through and excelled themselves, i.e. obviously. So when you've got a player that hasn't necessarily done any better or changed their what's perceived as their shortcomings, then it's easier to criticise them when you've got players around them that have improved. But having said that, he's already a great player, and obviously had a period out of the side, but he still does things that other players can't do. So it would be great if he did a little bit more vocalising, a little bit more leading, and all the things that we've hoped he would do. But he hasn't necessarily had the chance to do that this season because he hasn't played enough games.
Yeah, look, you're absolutely right. And I think it's really interesting that if you go back and we talk about the players that have kind of taken that role, and you talk about Jednak, you talk about Johan Kabay, and they've all been through that same thing at Palace where they've been picked out for not doing enough. And, you know, I did a thing before the COVID came along and ruined everything in terms of the football season, where I made a specific point about Luca's passing because I kept reading people going on about him giving the ball away too much. And, you know, and he had the best passing percentage of the whole team in terms of the midfielders. So it just seemed, you know, I was just trying to make the point that sometimes if you're sitting there watching a player and waiting for the mistakes, you will create your own reality from that. I don't think there's any doubt whatsoever that influence hasn't quite been there. But I think there's a lot of truth in what you say, Mike, in that other players have probably stepped up and sort of taken that focus. You know, and we're perhaps taking for granted a little bit what Luka does. But let's not avoid the fact that, okay, you know, he's also a human being who's had some quite poor games at times, you know, games where he hasn't been able to stamp that influence on the match. But like I say, I'm just, you know, the only point I'm making is that, you know, he speaks to the fans via a club Instagram chat, and, you know, most people are, you know, nice to him and respectful and appreciative, and it's just a small number who feel the need to make a point that, to me, doesn't really stack up.
And even if it did, it's rude. Just to be really straightforward, you know, yeah. the guy's our captain. He's been really good for us for a long time. Yeah, it's not his best season, but even then, he's not been terrible. And actually, just talking about the pass percentage point, you know, even if it was lower than it is, and the facts don't quite bear out the idea that, you know, he's been terrible, a pass completion rate, yeah, you're one half of that. But actually, if you pass and you've not got the support in terms of the person running back or anticipating what you're trying to do, that can be their fault as well as yours. So, you know, yeah. I've not got a lot of time for criticising Luka, even though he's not had his best season.
Yeah, great point, Chris. Let's take a chance to do our weekly Jordan Ayew appreciation, as it seems to be happening a lot at the moment. And we're doing it this time because Gary Taphouse, so I feel the need to mention, I don't know if we mentioned it at the time when we started being Back of the Nest, but he recorded our Back of the Nest intro and is therefore an absolute legend. But yeah, Gary Taphouse retweeted a video of Jordan Ayew's goal against West Ham. And I've got to say, it just, you know, I suppose it's probably the isolation doing my head in, but it almost brought a lump to the throat because I just remembered it. I think for a variety of reasons, that's probably the last time I was at Selhurst. Chris, Mike, you'd be able to tell me that? Maybe?
I think you've been once since.
Once after, maybe. Anyway, it's just such a really strong memory of obviously it was a late goal and it's an amazing goal and the whole, you know, way we celebrated, you know, we're there as a group and, you know, it was such a special moment, and just having that brought back when there's no football, just it brought a bit of a lump to the throat, but it also brought that same kind of feeling of elation. And I watched it over and over and just, oh my God, that goal is so underappreciated by the wider football world. It is breathtaking what he did. It's all instinct and just so much skill and ability, and made so much better by the fact that a year before that, you just could not imagine him getting anywhere close to doing it. What a great goal.
And to add context, the reason that he tweeted it is that somebody had asked him what the best goal this season that he's commentated on is across any games. So that's quite the accolade as well, because that guy does commentary for a lot of games.
Absolutely right. And it's definitely his decision on that was definitely not coloured by the fact that he's an avid Palace fan at all. He's, you know, he was speaking from complete honesty there. Actually, I say that in a slightly knowing way, but I don't think I've seen anything better this season. I really don't. Phenomenal goal. So very quickly, before we move on to a bit of general chat, we've got a message. It came back a while ago. We were talking to people. We asked for people about, you know, how, you know, tales from when they've been ill at games, and what we got was a series of stories about people shitting themselves, which I still would encourage massively on the socials and at hi@backofthenest.com if you want to get in touch. Mike absolutely loves it when we talk about people shitting themselves, and he's desperate for more. But we also talked about what your favorite
can't wait, keep those coming in, thanks.
But we also asked what your favorite games were, and Ken Barr, who's a listener from over in the States, I believe he's New York based, which is probably a really horrific place to be at the moment. So hopefully you're all right over there, Ken. And he's got two specific matches that he wanted to bring up. So the first was Boxing Day 1989, and just prior to my stint as a Palace fan. At that point in time, I was not really au fait with club support. I was just a general football fan, which I won't go into. It's quite a weird story. But anyway, prior to me. So he said He was at that first match, 1989 versus Chelsea, and late in the match, the ball came out to him in front of the main stand. Running over to take the throw was a then 19-year-old Chelsea kid sub. So he threw it to him. The ball went down the Sainsbury's end, and the Chelsea 19-year-old sub scored the equaliser. So the guy next to him said, "Welcome to Crystal Palace." So we got the immediate typical Palace feeling for Ken in his first game. And that particular sub was 19-year-old Graham Lasso. So he now does the EPL stuff for NBC in the States. So, you know, obviously it's pretty memorable for Ken. But, guys, you remember Graham Lasso, right? He was the Guardian reading footballer. That was his whole thing, wasn't it?
I remember Graham Lasso. He was a really decent left-back, fantastic in fantasy football for those who were doing that, because he got forward and got the ball in with crosses as well. And infamously was, despite not being gay, homophobically abused by Robbie Fowler on the pitch when he bent down and showed his arse to who then got sent off for reacting to it, even though he was quite right to react to it. So, yeah, I remember Lasso, good player, and an intelligent guy and a decent guy. So, yeah.
Oh, the 90s, eh? The same Robbie Fowler that mind snorting cocaine off the goal line. Jesus.
And he's now a massive landlord.
Yeah. We all live in a Robbie Fowler house is the chant, isn't it? We all live in a Robbie Fowler house. Anyway, the 90s, man. But yeah, Lasso, terrific player. I do remember either reading or seeing an interview where at one stage he said he was quite close to becoming a Palace player. Don't know the story behind that. Anyway, second story from Ken was that in the build-up to the 1990 FA Cup final, as mentioned earlier, there was a Lifeline meeting. Do you remember Lifeline at Palace? Probably not you, Mike. You, Mike, Chris?
Right.
Yeah, back in those days where we had to... Yeah,
fund organisation, that.
Indeed. So it was a meeting with Ron Nodes and Steve Coppell at Crystals. My God, at Crystals. What a nightclub. So a guy sitting across the aisle from him starts on Alan Pardew, calling the worst of the worst. They're calling him names that we might call him these days, in all honest. And as far as this bloke concerned, Pardew is worse than Jack the Ripper. The next day he goes to his local William Hill on Streatham High Street and he put 20 quid on Palace to win, final result, and Super Al to score the winner. The shop manager had never even heard of Alan Pardew and gave him 15-1. So he had a £300 check. Bloody hell, that's aging it. Check. Waiting for him when he walked in on Monday lunchtime. There you go, responding to the abuse of a player by putting a bet on him to upset the odds and coming out the winner. Fantastic story. Thank you very much for that, Ken. And if you've got similar stories yourself, do get in touch. Hi at Back of the Nest on email or check out our socials. And that is your lot for football chat. Oh, no, actually, I tell a lie. Mike, you've got some Twitter stuff.
Yes. Yeah, certainly do. Some we've asked people how they're dealing without Palace at the moment. So Leif Anderson's forehead is absolutely gutted that there was a channel called CPFC 1984 that's been taken down from YouTube with every season up until 2012's highlights up. I said we'd put out a plea to anyone if they had ripped from YouTube to re-upload. I did rip a few of them. I'll try and upload them. But if anyone else has got them, just start a new channel. I mean, if anyone's getting shitty about copyrights for, like, you know, Palace 2004 highlights, I think you're probably being a bit mean there. People need their Palace highlights at this tough time. Palace Ash was asked the oddest, most esoteric question I think we've ever received. How good was Matt Clark? Could he have been Al Speroni had he not got injured? I'll let Hambo answer that in a minute. And then King Louis, would love to hear what you'd all do from a long-term standpoint if you were given control of this club. Stadium prioritisation, youth development, transfer policies, managerial candidates, grand plans. So that is a pretty open-ended question from King Louis there. But let's answer the Matt Clark one first, shall we, Amber?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we can absolutely get into what would we do if we were in charge of Palace. I'll look forward to that in a sec. But on the Matt Clark subject, it was such a shame that he got injured, as was suggested. But you know, I think he would have been, and I don't want to disrespect a club legend in Jules, but I think he would have been even beyond that. And I might be getting nostalgic and all that kind of stuff, but for me, he had absolutely everything you needed to be a top class goalkeeper. You know, he was a massive guy, but he was so agile as well, and he commanded the box brilliantly. He just had everything that you want in a goalkeeper. Made top saves, and at times was a difference in matches. You know, and that's what we've got now with Vicente Guaita, in the sense that he is often a match winner. He will make a save that's as good as a goal up the other end. And Clark had all of that, and it's just, you know, you look at his record of playing. I think it was 38 games we looked before the show, and but that's over like a 3-4 year period. But he was injured badly for quite a lot of that, and just had to give up in terms of a comeback. And there's a lot of people in football who are like that. You know, it's the kind of what would have been career. You know, Dean Ashton springs to mind as an example there as well. Of players that had so much to give, but cruelly it was taken away. And I suppose you could possibly even talk about our own Johnny Williams in that respect, although obviously still playing, and hopefully we'll still keep having some kind of a decent career and keep representing Wales. But, you know, it's definitely a missed opportunity, and I remember Matt Clark very fondly indeed.
Wouldn't want him to have taken more games away from the Latvian prince, though.
yeah, your team... all-time best Palace team goalkeeper, Alex Kalinko. My God. Anyway, so let's move on from that terrible, terrible thought. Start, you know, just a general thing, really, of what would you do if you were in charge? And I was thinking this, and Roy mentioned it in his statement, because he had been watching lots of the football documentaries, and he picked out the Sunderland Till I Die one. And hopefully most of you have seen that, and if you haven't, do check it out. I mean, the first season is better than the second. It's just breathtaking. But the second season is so good from the respect that you're watching these two people who've come in and taken over the club, a guy called Stuart Donald and Charlie Methuen or something like that. And you've got Stuart Donald, who's essentially David Brent and even sounds like him. And you've got Charlie Methuen, who's just a posh, foul-mouthed twat. But at the same time, you kind of warm to them a little bit, because they're trying really, really hard. And what really brought it home, and it'll bring me back round to the point I'm making in a sec, what really hit home is they're on transfer deadline day. They've lost Josh Madger, their best striker, to Bordeaux. They've had to sell him because he wouldn't sign a new contract. And they're trying desperately to get a new striker in. And that's something as Palace fans we can relate to, constantly wanting a new striker who's going to come in and score 20, 25 goals a season, fire us up the table. You know, we're convinced there's one out there, and we're angry that the board don't get it. And Stuart Donald just got so wrapped up in that. He had his scout, and he had the manager telling him that Will Grigg, who they eventually did sign, wasn't worth more than £1 million. I think they ended up paying Wigan something like £4 or £5 million plus add-ons. They ended up paying him over 16 grand a week in wages, and he couldn't help himself. He was sat there and he just got stuck with that thought. You know, how can I say to the fans that we haven't replaced the striker that's firing us to promotion? I can't get to the end of the transfer window and not have signed this striker. And he paid massively over the odds. And, you know, history has proved, I think Will Griggs played like nearly 40 games and he scored 5 goals over basically 2 seasons. Massive waste of money and wages at League One level. And exactly the kind of thing that they criticised when they took over the club from the previous regime, overspending, overpaying and saddling the club with stupid debts. And they couldn't help it. They just couldn't help themselves. And that brings me to the point, I wouldn't be able to help myself if I had the resources. You know, if I had, I would just go out and I would be a fan in charge of a football club, and it would be a complete disaster. That's all I can really say on the matter. Guys, over to you.
Yeah, well, okay, if I come in first, this coronavirus crisis has demonstrated the stability or not of various clubs. You know, we've seen Spurs in a situation where, I mean, I think, to be honest, that's more just outright than anything else, but seeing Daniel Levy deciding to furlough staff when his business is, you know, not in a state where it needs to do that, which is massively taking advantage. Palace have done absolutely the right thing and have, you know, shown that they're doing that, and they've stepped up when it comes to things like helping the local food banks and the community, and they've been doing that this season anyway. So I have to say, I really admire the leadership at the club for the way that they've engaged with the local community. If I was in charge right now, I mean, you know, obviously, you know, first we've got to get games started again, make sure we stay up, which, you know, the current points total says we will. We've already signed the manager for another season, so that element isn't up for discussion either. The priority has to be, you know, getting on with the stadium development. Now, I happen to know that there's lots of discussion still going on about that. We're getting close, I gather, to signing the Section 106 agreement, which is the agreement between the club and the council with regard to contributions to local infrastructure. The big thing that needs to happen is a commitment to rehouse the people who live in the council homes to the rear of the main stand. Once the club commits to buy those homes and to replace them like for like for those people, then we're basically ready to go ahead as long as the club can, you know, bring itself to sign on the dotted line. So that would be my priority if I was the chairman, is getting on with progressing with that stadium redevelopment.
Well, there you go. I mean, that is the noble way to go and the right way to go. I, as I've said, would waste all of our money on transfers and probably fail in most of them. Mike?
Good use of the phrase outright c**t there. That would have got you sacked from Linux Action News.
I almost didn't notice it.
Yeah. I would be assuming that after the extension, Roy will be retiring, so I would really want a contingency plan for the manager in place, because that's something we have not done in the past. And it would be great if there was a longer term plan in place. Like to see the women's team get a bit more exposure. I'd love to see them play a little bit more at Selhurst. I don't know if it's possible with the championship in the women's game, tending to play on a Sunday, whether they could have one of the sort of double-header situations where after the men's game you could carry on and play the women's game after, or whether the groundspeople would be too impressed with that. But it certainly worked with the cricket. It's seen a huge increase in women's game being watched live. But it's something like that. Or just, you know, a few games at Selhurst with free tickets for schools, that kind of thing. That would be really great. Obviously, the training site, that's excellent. But that's a longer-term development. In terms of the next couple of years, definitely the manager and obviously the usual stuff that they get criticised for, you know, scouting players, that kind of stuff. It's hard to know if they've got players in mind. You know, the Nathan Ferguson thing, apparently he'd been on the radar for months. As long as that keeps happening, that's good. But the main thing is thinking, well, we are going to be in the Premier League next season, hopefully the season after that, and planning for those seasons, not just the current one.
Now, that's a good point. You mentioned Ferguson there. It's interesting that it's been in the papers that move is definitely on the cards in the summer. And if you go back to our transfer deadline show, talking with Dom Fifield, and you know, he was very much of the opinion that he would remain on the radar with a deal being pushed through there. I think that would be a cracking signing, you know, a quality right back to push Joel Ward, who can also cover at the centre and play left, I believe, as well. So, you know, that's an example of exactly the sort of thing we should be doing.
Just talking of transfers, I saw a report on a website which appeared to just be a clickbait place, implying that Palace and West Ham are vying for the signing of Madja, who you were just talking about. I don't know if that's got any substance to it, but if it has, that's really exciting.
We were linked before he went to Bordeaux in the first season of Sunderland Till I Die. And he's a former Palace youth player by all accounts as well. He was born in, I think, Lewisham, something like that, but left us very, very early on and moved away. But when you watch he was really on fire for Sunderland the season before last. The kind of chances he was putting away at 19, it was just, again, it was instinctive. It was he was such a strong lad as well. And he's only scored, I think, 9 in about 30, 35 games for Bordeaux. So not pulling up trees in League One in France, but still doing well enough that you think that's potentially a very strong signing. And he's incredibly, you know, young in terms of a striker as well, which we definitely need younger players with high potential.
when is the last time that a player that was linked with both us and West Ham actually come to Palace and not go to West Ham? If West Ham are interested, he's going to do a fucking Jordan Kugel, isn't he?
Well, yeah, it's almost as if the agent we tend to deal with is also heavily involved at West Ham, and it's almost as if they tend to play us off each other all the time.
On the other hand, they did sell us James Tompkins for a song, so, you know.
Oh, look, we've done well out of them. Tompkins and Koyata. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're doing cracking in terms of time. Look, you know, we've got nowhere to go, nowhere to be, so I don't really mind. And if you are struggling with the hour so far, can I recommend drinking the majority of a bottle of wine in about an hour? Because I'm having a great time. I really am. Anyway, let's leave the football chat there for now. Hopefully we've got something to talk about next week because we've done a great job there. And let's move on to some general chat.
Fintons.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Right, I've already mentioned making sure you get your reviews in on iTunes or your chosen podcast app. Much appreciated if you do that, 5 stars, and loads of people have been doing that. And it does have an effect. It has pushed us into the, in the podcast charts, gets us up there, gets us noticed. And in terms of the recommended sports podcasts, I noticed we jumped back up into that recently. So your hard work in rating us is having an effect and spreading the word, and we really do appreciate it. Keep that coming as well, even if you sort of register new accounts and things, and that can happen. And I dare say I've heard if you unsubscribe and resubscribe, it pushes you up the charts further. Don't do that. I don't want it to be fake, do I? But if you feel like it. Anyway, listen, we've got to talk about something. He's not here. DR Kernaz has had a couple of weeks off so far. I do know why. There's quite a lot going on for the young lad. He managed to find the time to win a FIFA tournament, though. But this week, he's been under it a little bit. He's had some real problems at home, and our thoughts are with him. And he's just it just seems he can't catch a break. And this week, it was an attack from, I'll tell you what, let's hear from DR describing what he was attacked by.
Good, yeah, that was coming over. Look at this. You telling me this is a bee? This is like a, that's like a flying spider. Look how many legs it has.
Look how many legs it has. It had 6 legs because it's a bee. But no, DR was convinced that a bumblebee. Now, to be fair, it did have an orange behind, which is not that common, although it is a recognised UK species of bumblebee. But a spider bee, everyone, a spider bee. I mean, I've got nothing more. It's a spider bee.
It speaks for itself, doesn't it? It's just, that's DR.
I mean, seriously, I mean, a couple of people have mentioned this, and I think I mentioned it on the show the other week, that he is fast becoming the new Kyle Pilkington. And it will happen. You know, he will end up just with a baffling TV show. At the very least, it'll be an impressive YouTube channel. I mean, he already does our YouTube channel, but I mean, we're trying to convince him to do various things. We've got a whole plan for something called DR Does. I'm not going to say any more than that. But if we can get that off the ground, I'm telling you, I'm going to sit back and drink in the millions from his broken brain.
It's retire.
It's pornographic is all we can tell you at this point.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. Anyway, so yeah, if you check out our socials, you'll probably be able to find the video that goes along with that audio. Heartily recommended. And not the first time we've had to put a video. Do you remember the spider one where he decided that the spider was flying? Good times, good times. So I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, dangerous ways of killing time, because obviously we've got a lot of time in our hands at the moment, all of us. We're having to stay in. But can I just put a health warning out? Do not, under any circumstances, go on YouTube without an established strategy of what you're planning to do. Because I lost 5 hours today from clicking on one video that I wanted to watch. I watched things today like the most, five of the most shocking things ever caught on camera, or dash cams, that was it, or amazing things found on Google Earth. And they're always narrated by someone who can't speak properly. And generally speaking, not in any way entertaining. But as soon as one rubbish video finishes, a slightly different one starts, and it just destroys me. Gents, do you have any trouble with similar?
Yes, I absolutely have that, Chris. So, I mean, I've mentioned already my strange hours during this particular crisis. So on a non-YouTube related thing first, I've been filling time by watching the new series of Red Dwarf, which is absolutely fantastic. But once I run out of new episodes of that, I then have to find something else to do in the hours before I'm able to get to sleep. Which is usually about 5 a.m. at the moment, which is great. So I end up looking at things like, you know, with YouTube clips that are titled things like dog doesn't want to go for a walk, so throws a hissy fit. and then once that one finishes, there's another one about him moaning about his new bed, and so on and so on. And I'm a sucker for things like that, so... Yeah, I've spent a lot of hours watching a lot of angry dogs on YouTube.
I mean, I get where you're coming from. My sleep is absolutely fucked at the moment. Like, I can guarantee I'll wake up at 3 a.m. and be up for 2.5-3 hours. I was following videos from a Twitter channel this morning at about 4 a.m. called Out of Context Human Race, and it was a sort of. It was all the videos of people being total bastards to each other. What was the name of the guy that got quite famous? Something Pickering. Anyway, yeah, getting angry with cyclists and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I remember the guy. It's Ron yeah. Pickering.
Ronnie Pickering. Yeah. It was one of those channels, and I went for about an hour of it just because I couldn't sleep, and then I just thought. I could have been teaching myself, I don't know, like the movements of Alexander the Great or something. Why the fuck am I watching this shit? Just don't do it to yourself, people. Like, literally, maybe I should start buying some Nitol, because it's a waste of time. It kills some brain cells and it doesn't get you anywhere.
Facebook's destroyed me, though, since it does that fit like autoplay thing as you're scrolling. And, you know, I ended up watching, yeah, like fight videos, and I'm just like, I'm not into that, really. That's nothing. But, you know, watching some guy get knocked out because he's being leery and stuff like that, it just is oddly compelling. Yeah, and you just, yeah, your whole life kind of disappears in an evening. But I suppose we've got a lot of time on our hands, so it's not the end of the world, is it?
On that note, you may or may not be into dogs. So if you're not into dogs, if you're not a kind of Bobby Madley man, then you don't need to listen to the next bit where I mention.
Where's this going?
It's not that video. It's not Surface. Don't worry. All I'm going to do is recommend a chap on Twitter called Mr. Andrew Cotter. That's C-O-T-T-E-R. And what he does, I think he might actually be the bloke who does the commentaries on Crufts. And he's got two Labradors who do very ordinary things that he commentates on as though they're actual Crufts things. And it's quite funny if you think that kind of thing is funny.
Yeah, can I recommend the Twitter account Sir Michael? I don't know if any of you have seen that.
Not yet. Following it now.
No.
Sir Michael, he does the best possible trolling that you can ever see, because it's not rude, it's not unpleasant to people. He basically seeks out people on Facebook and answers their questions, but answers them in a way that presents data to them, but no context of the data, and then infuriates them as they try and get him to explain what he means. It's I cannot do it justice, but check it out, Sir Michael on Twitter. You will have an absolute whale of a time. So last thing from me in terms of general chat, and I'll throw over to you guys if you've got anything further. But I talked a little bit, I think last week I talked about the fact I burnt myself cooking, and I really have started to rediscover the concept of cooking, and it's through necessity, because I've not really stocked up particularly well in terms of food, can't really be bothered and a bit afraid of the risk of keep going to the shops and all that kind of stuff. So I'm basically having to use whatever I've got in the house. And unfortunately, that meant this last week discovering that I had a whole massive bag of frozen chicken breasts and the necessary ingredients to make a variety of different types of chicken nuggets with sauces. So I think I probably subsisted on, for about 3 days, on entirely chicken nuggets in different chili sauces with onions and garlic. That's my thing. Fry up some onions with some garlic, get the garlic nicely roasted, bake the chicken nuggets that I've made with, you know, like from scratch, slicing up chicken breast and then covering it in olive oil and herbs and breadcrumbs and stuff, baking it quite nicely, and then throwing it into the pan with the sauces and stuff at the end. Not overly healthy, but I maintain I'm getting veg through the onion and garlic, and it's good for you in terms of your immune system, and chicken nuggets are nice. The problem is eating what must be sort of 40 chicken nuggets at a time. Not good. But I'm enjoying myself, and that's the main thing.
Well, that sounds fantastic, Chris. And, you've now got me salivating jealously at the idea of chili and garlic sauces on chicken nuggets. Once this nightmare is over and we're able to resume, if we're able to do video content where those of us who eat meat are able to sample each other's chicken nuggets and agree on, you know, who is the champion chicken nugget maker, then I'm up for joining that.
Okay.
Deal.
I really enjoyed the dramatic pause there. Sampling each other's
chicken nuggets.
Well, I mean, this does also open the window for me to tell a different cooking anecdote. So I was reflecting earlier on the fact that having turned 40 in the last month, it's now 20 years since I moved out of the student flat that looks identical to the one I live in now in terms of the messiness of it and general chaos. But it also reminded me that it was when I was 20 that I decided for the first time to cook egg fried rice, which at that stage I'd got the ingredients for, as I understood them, which was basically rice, onions and egg. So I got all of those and heated some oil and put them all into the frying pan and successfully, as I thought at the time, cooked them. It was a bit crunchy, though, at which point I rang home and asked my mum what I should have done. It turned out I should have boiled the rice first.
Jesus, man. That's,
yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I couldn't waste that rice, so I ate every single fucking bit of that anyway.
Did you not have some quite major digestive problems after that?
Well, it was quite scratchy on the way out.
Sort of sandblasting out the fucking...
Yep.
Oh, my days. Dear, oh, dear. Mike,
dear, you're... I've got nothing on me.
Yeah. Mike, you know, you must do a lot of cooking being a vegan since no one really caters for that these days. Any horrible cooking stories?
I don't need to add any horrible cooking stories. You've managed to bring it back to fucking shit again, haven't you? People have heard enough. Let's get to the quiz.
All right, well, next week, please tell us the story about you having the shits, please. Anyway, yeah, absolutely, coming right up, we have a fantastic quiz. Hopefully you enjoy that very much indeed. Just before that, though, just a quick reminder, check out our sponsor, Pitch Sport Football. Google them, download their app, get involved. Should be a lot of fun once the season gets up and running again in terms of predictions and competing and all that kind of stuff, as well as video questions from DR Kerners and the aforementioned John Solarco does some video content there, often relating to Palace as well. I'm sure you'll enjoy it very much indeed. They support us and they're continuing to do so in this downtime, so please do support them as well. Follow them on social media, all that kind of stuff, and you know, be much appreciated. So on with the quiz. Right, it's quiz time. And a little bit of an explanation this time around. So we've got a quiz that Mikey's put together for myself, Christopher Clark and Michael Scott. And we've got 10 questions which we need to answer. We're using the Kahoot app for fun. So we'll get you'll hear the question read out. Obviously, we won't be hearing that due to the wonders of editing. But the correct answer will give you 1,000 points. And you get bonus points for answering quickly, and those, and also points for a correct answer streak. I'm not going to go into a huge amount of detail but you'll hear us announce the scores on a regular basis. We get 30 seconds per question to answer, or it'll end if we've all made an answer. And yeah, it'll be me versus Chris versus Mike. So it's let's do this quiz. Let's do it, guys. You ready? Hey,
hell yeah!
Smash it.
Question number one: Crystal Palace were bottom of the Premier League at Easter in 97/98. Is it true or is it false? That was a horrible question, man.
Oh,
hooray! So the answer was, of course, true, and that Crystal Palace were bottom of the Premier League at Easter in 97-98. So, Chris, you got it right, didn't you?
I did.
And I got it right, didn't I? Yeah, yeah. Mike, you didn't get that right, did you?
That was a bit of a dick there, wasn't it?
Yeah, upsetting. Upsetting scenes. Anyway, let's crack on.
Question two. Where do Crystal Palace women play their home games? Is it Gander Green Lane, Hayes Lane,
God,
Honeycroft, or Meadow Park?
Oh, I want to say that, but I've got it. Oh, that's wrong. Or is it? Is it wrong? It's right. Okay, good, 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 good. We're all right. So the answer was Hayes Lane, Bromley. I just had a massive moment of doubt, and I can't remember. Didn't they? Like, I swear, like the reserves used to play at a different stadium. Was it Dulwich or something like that, or Kingstonian maybe?
Yeah. I think they had a time at Kingstonian, yeah.
Yeah, I was just having a bit of a breakdown there. But we were all correct with that. I'm leading, by the way. I've got 1,956 points after two questions. Christopher Clark has 1,808 points. And Mike Scott with 933. But you can get it back. There's loads of time left. Let's go.
Question three. Who was the top league scorer for Palace in the 16-17 season? Was it Wilf Sahar, Johan Kabay, James McArthur, or Christian Benteke?
Okay. So the correct answer was, of course, Christian Benteke with an incredible 15 league goals in the Premier League. And we were all correct, guys. High five and all that, yeah? Yeah. Seems a long, long time ago, doesn't it?
Kabay scored four that season.
Yeah, there you go. So we'll do another points update after the next question. Let's crack on. Question four. Both of these players scored league goals for Palace in the 16-17 season. Was it Benteke and Remy, Kabay and Flamini, Ledley and Campbell, or Sacco and Townsend?
Really?
Incredibly, the correct answer was Joe Ledley and Fraser Campbell.
Yes.
Well done, Chris. I went for Sacco and Townsend, but I don't think Sacco was with us that season. Messed that up massively. And I did, after I pressed it, I'll be honest, I did think about Ledley and Campbell because I knew Fraser had scored, and of course Ledley did when he joined. Anyway, I'll get over it. I swear I'll get over it. Let's crack on. Taking
who's
the lead,
in the lead? Weren't you going to do a score?
I know, I was going to sort of get score, just can we move on? Part, I don't, who, no one's keeping score, are they, Chris? Come on.
Question five. Crystal Palace spent a reported $92.5 million in 16-17. Is it true or is it false?
I mean, this is a risk. Yeah, it was false. Get in there.
It's a bit more than that, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So the correct answer, just to be clear, was that was false. Palace did not spend $92.5 million in 2016-17. It was, in fact, $81.5 million. Who got that right and who got that wrong?
Just yeah, I thought it was more, so I got it right, yeah. But not from knowing the answer.
Excuse me, we're not going to check on that. That's irrelevant. Just going to keep moving swiftly on.
Question six. Who received the most yellow cards in the 16-17 season? Was it Luca? Was it Scott Dunn? Was it Benteke? Or was it Wilf?
I've screwed up there. I think, yep, I have. Yeah. No one got it right. So the answer actually was, incredibly, the most yellow cards was Christian Benteke with 10. Definitely favouring the 16-17 season here, Mikey, with this quiz. Luca, incredibly, only got 4, but it was half a season for Luca, wasn't it? So Benteke didn't really think about that when answering quickly. But Zaha second with 8 yellow cards there, but there you go. So, yeah, no movement on the scores, which we won't talk about the order of those till later. Question 7. What of these is considered an absolute... Harry the Hornet, Lewis Dunk. Oh, no.
That's tough.
I answered too quickly because, I mean, I reckon both answers are correct. I don't know if you can do that. Someone hasn't answered.
It's not letting me answer.
Oh, both answers were correct. Incredible work, Mikey. I know I predicted it, but amazing work. Fantastic stuff there. So happy days. Let's have a... Unfortunately, I might have changed things, but we'll still ignore the score. Now, let's go through the scores, sorry. So at the moment, Mike is at the rear with 3,559 points. I am in second place with my pseudonym name of Dave on 5,017 points with Christopher Clark, 5,059. It's tight at the top, Chris.
Well, what's great, though, is... Kahoot keeps telling me I'm on the podium, so it's giving me what I need.
Exactly.
Question 8. Before this season, Yannick Bolasie was the largest value transfer out of Palace. Who is third on the list? Is it Dwight Gale, Wilfred Zaha, Andy Johnson, or Clinton Morrison?
Oh, what? Okay. Think this through, but how can I think this through? Oh, I've just pressed one.
Oh, I've pressed the wrong one.
Yeah, I think I have as well.
No, I haven't.
Oh, Mike, you've pulled one out of the bag there. So the answer was Dwight Gale.
I thought Zaha was slightly more, but yeah, excellent.
Yeah, I went with AJ and I was wrong. I just couldn't quite place how much it was. But Dwight Gale, 10.8 million. There you go.
Question 9. Who scored more league goals for Palace? Was it Adebola or was it Akinbaye?
That is a ridiculous question. I got it. I knew. Dele Adebola, man. He was a veritable goal machine. 5 goals in 39 apps. Akinbaye only got 3 in 24.
Fuck's sake. Should have known that.
Unlucky boy. So let's have a quick look at this scoreboard now. I think we should pay lot of attention to it. So,
yeah, it's really important now, yeah.
So Mike is still down there, 4,572, although not a million miles away from Chris Clark on 5,059. And some other guys at the top there with 5,967.
All still to play for.
But isn't it the final question now?
Well, exactly. So if you get it wrong and I get it right, I could still win.
That's true. You could. All right, let's crack on. And finally, question 10, a visual question. Whom is this former Palace player? Is it Neil Alexander or Jack Hunt? Ooh, a visual one. Oh, I don't know if it is. Yes, it was. I can't believe I've done it. Oh, my mum's going to be so proud. That the visual clue that we were that we were looking for There was a picture of a Palace player, of course, and the Palace player was Jack Hunt. Of course, he signed for £2 million, played no times at all, and broke an ankle in training. I thought it was a leg, but an ankle.
I've just got to raise the patronising comment from Mikey on this. It is, of course, Jack Hunt.
I mean, I'll be honest, I don't know quite what Neil Alexander looks like. So, I mean, I did remember what Jack Hunt looked like. So there
Neil Alexander's black, actually.
No, he's not. No.
Okay.
So let's just go through the final points. So third place, bronze medal, Mike, on the podium, 5 out of 10.
I'm on the podium. What more could you want?
4,572 points. Chris Clark remaining on 5,059 points with 5 correct out of 10. Same questions correct as Mike, but faster on those fingers, Chris.
Yeah, exactly. I'll be back in future and, you know.
And after last week's debacle, I am top of the tree. 7,002 points, 7 questions out of 10 correct. And, you know, let's face it, we're all impressed.
Have we got the points title? So we've got like a total points title?
A running total. Well, Mikey can listen back and work that out, can't he? I mean, obviously the people will change over a period of time, but maybe we can work out an average based on number of quizzes played. That'd be fascinating, wouldn't it? Well, we've got a lot of time on our hands, let's face it.
You're playing fast and loose with the word fascinating there, but excellent, yeah.
Right, hope you enjoyed that. Thank you very much for listening. Cheers to Mikey for producing, to Chris and to Mike for their time today. And yeah, we'll be back soon. Obviously, the preview show, we'll be releasing another one of their fantastic podcasts. Hopefully this time it won't be quite so tea-centric, but I very much enjoyed that. I'm still a little angry that Albert leaves the tea bag in a cup of tea. And also, he seems to speak as an expert on tea, but he's using tea bags rather than loose leaf tea. And I'm considering sending a video, as they requested, on how to make a proper cup. But moving swiftly on from that, we'll be back again next Sunday, if not before. As we're desperate to occupy our time by making new podcasts. Hope you're enjoying it. Speak to you soon. Bye.
Back of the Chest, Coronavirus Self-Isolation Podcast.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.